Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Ryan Lehrer on WNYC, and maybe it's time to expand the definition of domestic violence. According to the Urban Resource Institute, some 98% of domestic violence victims face economic abuse, not just physical harm. And it's the economic trap that is often the most pernicious, preventing victims from leaving a dangerous situation and getting back on track. Dr. Ludi Green is the founder of Second Chance Employment Services. Based in D.C., it is the first and only employment placement agency in the U.S. for domestic violence victims. And she has a new book called Ending Domestic Violence Captivity, A Guide to Economic Freedom. Dr. Green, welcome to WNYC.
Thank you so much for inviting me today. I'm so excited to be able to share my experiences.
Captivity is a strong word. Ending Domestic Violence Captivity is the title of your book. What does it mean?
Basically, what I talk in the book is about how to liberate these victims through financial independence, these women who have been trapped in abusive situations because their partner have exert power upon them by leaving them with no financial means for them to survive or to get out of the situation. So in this book, we show all the whole steps, how to get out, and I share even the business model of the organization, hoping that other people will be able to create the same concept.
Is it that financial dependence helps create the conditions for abuse?
Totally. Financial abuse is a common tactic used by abusers to gain power and control in a relationship. So the forms of financial abuse may be subtle or overt by in general, but include tactics to limit the partner's access to assets. So these people will not be able to do much because they're all dependent on their partner.
So, for example, we read on the Urban Resource Institute site that abusers will even run up credit card debt on their victims' cards. Is that a good example?
It is a good example. Also, as well, there are situations by which, for example, they see this lady is working. She has a great job. And the abuser may say, you know, let's start saving. Let's do something good for us. And they give them like a limit, a budget, with their own money, the money of their own, of the person, the lady who has it. And they say, this is a limitation. You can only spend, let's see, $20 for lunch for the whole week. And then it starts like that, little by little. Oh, you know what? You don't need a car. You can take the bus. Oh, I can take you. And then by the end, you start realizing you don't have any more control. And then when you see it, you don't even have control to your access to your credit cards. You don't have access to anything.
So, listeners, any personal experiences or questions or anything you want to say to Ludi Green, author of Ending Domestic Violence Captivity, A Guide to Economic Freedom, 212-433-WNYC. Is this resonating with any of you who may have been victims of domestic violence and felt that there was an economic side to it, 212-433-WNYC, or that the economics of it helped keep you trapped in that situation, 212-433-9692, or for anyone else with a question or a comment for our guest, 212-433-9692. And of course, as always, when we do a segment that's anything of this nature, feel free to call anonymously. Just call yourself Jane Doe, whatever, 212-433-9692. Dr. Green, if we really generalize from what you've said so far to the extreme, then there's a risk in being a stay-at-home mother, since the stay-at-home parent in parenting situations are, you know, financially dependent on the other, and it tends to be women. How far down that road do you want to go?
I can share with you. I think that, you know, to me, I love a stay-at-home mom, and I was a stay-at-home mother, but you really put in a you put yourself in a really difficult situation because you don't know what will happen then with your relationship. How can you, at the end, trust 100% to someone else your own financial dependency? So it is up to the person. I think that the best thing to do myself, you know, my recommendation is each one of them, they have to have their own money, their own bank accounts, and their own safety. I think financial independence is key. And your own money is really for my studies and for all the experience I have seen all my life is that it's very much required. If a woman decides to stay at home, that's fine. It has the support system of her parents. It has the support system of their own money, some savings, have some education. You have to have some education because how are you going to go and then, you know, be self-sufficient by your own and take care of yourself if something occurs? So be safe than sorry.
So when you talk about helping to provide financial independence, which is what your Second Chance Employment Services does, what does that mean?
Well, basically, I have been an activist with victims of violence for the past 26 years, and I came up with a concept that financial independence is women who have been victims of violence, they can find through meaningful careers. So my background is in human resource management. And in 2001, I created the first employment agency. It is an employment agency like anyone else can go, you know, like Manpower, places that you can go for temp jobs, like that, that you can go with a background of being victims of violence, and we can provide employment for you. How does it work? The people who come to us, first of all, we have partnerships with shelters, welfare-to-work programs, Department of Social Services, and faith-based organizations. Also, we have partnerships with employers. We have currently about 120 employers who they have signed up agreements with us to be our partners. And these are basically firms who they're willing to place the victims on a long-term careers to help them be on their feet. Example firms, Booz Allen & Hamilton, PNC Bank, SunTrust Bank, IBM, Washington Gas. We have fabulous companies all over. Borghese, which is one of our sites, you know, we work with one of our board of directors, Georgia Mosbacher, in New York. So we have a lot of firms that they're willing to help these victims. And the way it works is this employment agency will take in the person, so you will come. First of all, we do not ask you questions, accusations, or anything like that. We are there to help you. We are there to know what is the matter, how can we help you enter the workforce. If training is needed, we will provide to our partner organizations or from our organization as well. But the first thing is we have the entrance to those firms for them to become financially independent through long-term careers.
Dr. Ludi Green, our guest, founder of Second Chance Employment Services and author of a new book, Ending Domestic Violence Captivity, A Guide to Economic Freedom. And boy, have you started something with our callers. Our board is entirely full. And so let's talk to Matilda in Valley Stream. You're on WNYC. Hello, Matilda.
Yes, hello. Oh, what a topic. You hit it right on the head. I'm 66 now, and my husband left when I was pregnant with my second child. However, during those 10 years of marriage, he did exactly what was described, financially kept me slowly, and I stayed home with the kids, but very financially bound to his precocious nature of spending. And after he left, I was bankrupt. I had no credit. I had two kids and no car, no money, no nothing. It was really difficult trying to build my credit, my self-respect. And had it not been for Displaced Homemaker Center in Hempstead, which I found by an accident, to help me get self-esteem back and realize that I was not the victim to my experience as I felt I was, my self-esteem would have still suffered. And I have to say, I never married again, and I never trusted again. So the damage is there.
And after the 10 years that you described, he left you.
Well, he left me, yes. I was pregnant with our second child. I wouldn't have an abortion. And even though he tried to create an abortion situation, I was fortunate enough to be able to save the baby. And he was violent in passive ways. I think the damage he did was more non-visible than visible. However, the damage is there, and it's a scar that stays. It doesn't go away.
Dr. Green, do you want to say anything to Matilda? What a story.
Oh, Matilda, I feel for you, and God bless you for all your efforts. You're a hero, really, to be able to sustain yourself afterwards and taking care of those children.
Thank you.
I mean, it's amazing, you know, and those are the people that they really touch my heart, and that's what I continue my work, because women like you are the ones that push me to continue, because are those children who are left in vulnerable situations, and if we're not there for them, who will be?
Exactly, and they're two daughters that are self-sufficient. Fortunately, we're able to find husbands that treat them with respect, so that they were not turned off to marriage, which happens a lot in second-generation abuse. Mm-hmm. And even though my brothers were also abusive, I come from an Italian household, and I had to withstand that as well. Mm-hmm. After my husband left me, my brothers were just as bad.
Yeah.
And it's a family dynamic. So it's not just one person. It's generational.
Mm-hmm. Matilda, thank you so much for being open about that.
Thank you.
My goodness. And here's an anonymous caller from Brooklyn. Hi, you're on WNYC. We appreciate you calling in.
Hi, thanks for covering this. This is such a huge, big, important issue that people don't think about unless they're in it, maybe. My situation is that I have a young daughter, and I separated from her father when she was one, and I found out last year that he was molesting her, and we're currently in the court process, and I'm trying to protect her, and he is using his financial power to try to prove that he should have access to her because he paid child support. He doesn't pay it in full, but he pays some, and that seems impressive to the courts. And so he's trying to use that as a tool to continue to have access to her and perhaps harm her further. And it's one way that perpetrators of violence really can manipulate their victims and the children of their victims. Is through this question of child support. And it seems that if they pay child support, they're often looked upon very favorably because there's so many fathers who don't pay child support. So when courts say, oh, he's paying for this, well, he should have access to the child, even though he's been harming her. So it's another means that perpetrators of violence use to really to gain access to their victims.
Dr. Green, do you want to weigh in on this? Because, you know, as I'm sure you know, the whole question of child support makes men and women both so angry when men are feeling that they're denied access unless they, you know, give the support, or even if they do give the support and it's used in a certain way. And women are like, you don't pay your child support. So how do you feel that this plays into what you're writing about and listening to our caller?
You know, to be honest, this is a very hard situation, especially with her. Listening to her story and that the husband is abusing the child, our systems, to be honest, in different states are very difficult. Some of them, they don't really work on favor for any woman or sometimes for men. So it's something that we're still struggling. We need to work together and hoping that there will be changes for the best of both. But what's happening to this particular lady and her child, it really breaks my heart.
If any parent, including a father who is paying child support, is abusing a child, that's obviously reportable. What should someone do?
Well, in this situation, you report it, but many times, you know, you have to have all the evidence. So it's not just only that. You have to have evidence,
yes.
Witnesses. What things are proving that? What they show? And then you will have to have basically a lawyer to help you in this particular case. So it's not as simple as that. Ourselves in our organization, we've been dealing with two cases like that for the past basically over 2 years, and we're still dealing with it. That's how messed up the system can be.
Jenny in Harlem, you're on WNYC. Hi, Jenny.
Hi. I come from a home where my mother was abused by my father. And when she, you know, sort of finally tried to get help, she actually had a career. So she could have worked, but we lived thousands of miles away from any family, and she had three kids. So, you know, it wasn't a viable option. She had a baby and two other younger kids. And, you know, what was she going to do? Spend all her money on child care, and then what would we have to live on?
I'm glad you raised that scenario because, Dr. Green, I presume that you run into a lot of women in situations like that, maybe did have professional training, but then were home with the kids for a long time and became victims of abuse. What does the Second Chance Employment Services model offer for people like that?
Well, we do a lot of reach out and a lot of public awareness for women to understand that we are there for them, that we can be able to help them reenter the workforce, because that's key. When you stay a home mother, many times it's very difficult to reenter the workforce because you lose your network, you know, all the people, your friends, you're isolated like, you know, her mother was with the children, and you also lose many of your skills for work, you know, work skills, you lose them because you have not been practicing. So that's what Second Chances are for. So people who are in that situation can reach out to us. And, you know, we have a 1-800 number. It's 1-888-331-7451. and they can call there, and we'll be able to give them guidance on how can they reach out to us to reenter the workforce or prepare them, getting prepared. Something that I think that is very important, even those years that you're a stay-at-home mother with your children, always be prepared. You know, taking a class here, and even if it's far away, right now you can take classes over the Internet. So it's not like you are not able to do that unless you're in a very rural areas, which that would be difficult. But there's always CDs or ways to do some type of a study. And we provide many, many opportunities for women to be able to reenter the workforce.
And one of the things you write about before you go is how this doesn't exactly end once someone gains financial independence necessarily. You tell the story of someone you helped place in a new job who was doing well for about a year and a half, but then her boss found out her history and began to sabotage her career. Ah, is that common?
You know what, to be honest, we have run with those situations, yes, because people's perceptions about someone who has been a victim can really make them, you know, change their whole perception. For example, they are very happy with this particular client that I have. We placed him in an amazing job. She was there working. It was amazing. Suddenly, there were gossip. People start talking about it. And this individual realized, oh, it was a victim. And then they start talking. Then he starts seeing all these different defects on this particular lady. Say, oh, well, she's not doing this. She's acting different. She's getting upset. It wasn't real. It's just a perception. So when people hear about domestic violence, right away they have their own ideas.
But what are you saying? Because this gives women who even follow your path less hope, it sounds like to me. Should they be keep their victim status a secret in the workplace?
Totally. You should not talk about that unless you have, like, you will go to an ombudsman, talk that in, you know, there. You don't need to be talking to the public. They don't need to know everyone there. But if you go to the ombudsman in your companies or the people that they deal in the human resources department, they have to have special counselors or people who they assist you. Not many companies have those resources, though. So that's why now we're working on trying to reach out corporations more in educating about the issue of domestic violence and to bring new resources and ways to collaborate and help victims of domestic violence. But, you know, many times, like I mentioned, it can be in stamina, and then you don't want that to happen.
Dr. Ludi Green is founder of Second Chance Employment Services, based in D.C. She has a new book, Ending Domestic Violence Captivity, A Guide to Economic Freedom. And judging from the callers who did get on the air and the many who have been waiting to tell their stories who are not going to get to, this is a big issue and an underreported issue. A bigger issue for many people in their lives than a lot of us realize. That number that Dr. Green gave before, I'll repeat it in case you went to get pens real quickly as she was saying it, 888-331-7451, 888-331-7451. And we've also linked to resources on our webpage to Dr. Green's site and the book site, as well as local resources here in the New York area, if anyone listening needs help. So you can go to WNYC.org and click on Brian Lehrer Show. Dr. Green, thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Have a wonderful day.